Well, with a graying older population and virtually no immigration, Japan confronts an existential demographic crisis. Result? Severe labor shortages, collapsing social security system. Japanese authorities are trying their damnedest to persuade women to have babies again. But regrettably for the authorities and for Japan, such strategies are hardly ever very viable. Let's go live to London. Somebody researching that, writing about it, and we'll get also to some European things. Annabelle Timsit, staff writer for Quartz Online. Annabelle, what about Japan's predicament? And I already added, of course, traditionally, Japan has not taken a lot of immigrants. It's almost kind of the purity of the Japanese.
Hi, Alan. Thanks for having me. Yeah, so I've been looking into this a little bit, and, you know, it's no secret that Japan is facing this huge demographic crisis. Kind of everybody knows that. But some of the things that I was focusing on are the policies that they've put in place to try to encourage Japanese people to have more babies. And, you know, that's obviously there are two distinct problems here. One is that Japanese are having fewer babies, and another is that the population is aging. People are living longer and longer. So there's kind of two sides to this crisis. So I looked into the policies that the government is putting in place to try to encourage people to have more babies.
Yeah, we already hear stereotypically about how some Japanese workers just keel over from heart attacks. They're working so many hours. And that seems to be part of it, isn't it? I mean, this workaholic culture, no time, and the cost of babies.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. There's even a word for it in Japanese. It's karoshi, which roughly translates to death from overwork. So, you know, Japanese workers work really what appears to us to be an insane amount of hours. The costs of raising a child are very high, and especially for women, the costs are high because they have a really tough time going back into the workplace afterwards. Japan is one of those countries where re-entry into the workforce is really hard for working moms. And so that's one of the things that the government has been doing, is trying to make it easier for women to go back to their jobs after having babies. But yeah, generally speaking, you know, there's a lack of availability of childcare. The education costs are incredibly high, especially for private really high quality child care, which obviously every parent would like to be able to give to their child. And so, you know, the conditions are just incredibly difficult for people who work and who would like to have children.
And yet, look at Europe where you are. Many countries have fairly generous child support, child care, all the rest. And most European countries themselves have had declining birth rates, and if it were not for some immigration, might be even more underwater. So, you know, if Western Europeans and increasingly Eastern Europeans can't do it, how can the Japanese?
Right. Well, it's definitely not a, you know, panacea. It's not going to solve the problem automatically to have these policies. But if you try to compare the fertility rate that we're seeing now in Japan, which is about 1.43 now, and we know that replacement rate is about 2.1 kids on average over a lifetime per woman. You know, we're not seeing figures that are quite that bad in Europe. And so, you know, while putting in place these policies doesn't automatically mean that you won't have a problem with lowering fertility rates, it's true that putting them in place will make it easier for people who do want to have kids to have kids.
And, of course, the Chinese authorities imposed one child, one couple, except in rural areas, for many, many years. Now they've reversed because they're graying. They're getting older.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So they reversed that policy.
So Europe now, UK, British Prime Minister, how's that going?
Well, I have to say, Alan, I mean, it just keeps getting crazier and crazier. Well, we're in the middle of a leadership race for who will replace Theresa May as Prime Minister within the Conservative Party, and after several debates and votes, they've narrowed the field of candidates down to two people, Jeremy Hunt and Boris Johnson. Boris Johnson is currently considered to be kind of the front runner for the race, but actually there's been a sort of scandal that's erupted here in the UK over the last 3 days that have called into question his chances, and that's been allegations of neighbors reported a kind of a loud dispute between him and his girlfriend in her home. So that's you know, raised some questions as to the viability of his campaign. But, yeah, so essentially it's down to the two men who have relatively different approaches to Brexit, which is kind of the big question here in the UK, what will happen in October. But we'll have to just wait and see who wins that race.
And, of course, Boris Johnson is just anathema to a number of Brits. I know the Scottish independence leader has said very disparaging things. Of course, she has her agenda.
Yes, he is, to put it politely, a polarizing figure. He, you know, he has made some comments that some people think, you know, are disqualifying. Others say that they need someone who is strong on Brexit and who is committed to the UK exiting the European Union on October 31st, no matter what happens, with or without a deal. You know, I mean, we'll have to see. This race is a little bit different because it's not the general UK population that's voting for their next prime minister. It's Conservative Party members who are voting.
Within the party.
So that, right, exactly. So that population of voters is a little bit different and not necessarily representative of the wider population. So it is, you know, it's a different population with different interests, different motivations for what they're looking for in a prime minister. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see what happens there.
For good or bad, how often is Boris Johnson compared to one Donald J. Trump?
Right. Well, that's a little bit the comparison that's difficult to escape. But I would say, you know, there's some key differences as well between the two men. And most notably the fact that Boris Johnson has had, you know, quite a long career in politics. So unlike when Donald Trump won the 2016 election and it was kind of his first foray into politics, Boris Johnson has been around for a while and he's got a lot of name recognition.
Well, let's relate it now to the United States and some of those Rust Belt areas that have felt overwhelmed by the impact of global trade and have had communities shrivel because of cutbacks in industry and all the rest. That part of England and the United Kingdom, but especially England, where are they? Any sense where those Brits are in terms of who they would want for a leader?
That's a good question. You know, I think that because the people who vote for the Prime Minister are only the party members, there hasn't been as much of a, you know, wide polling done on the general population to see what they would want, just because they, you know, they don't all get to vote to see who replaces Theresa May. So it's been more a lot of trying to figure out what this kind of unique electorate of Conservative Party members want. And it definitely appears from the polls that, you know, if you count those as reliable, then it appears that Boris Johnson has the lead here, by, you know, a pretty significant margin. But, you know, if there's anything that 2016 has taught us is that polls can be wrong, so and things can change pretty quickly, so we'll see.
All right, Annabelle Timsit of Quartz, live from London, Quartz on Japan's demographic crisis, and that's what happens to a country with a shriveling birth rate and no immigration, and then to the UK race for Prime Minister, but again within the Tories, within the Conservative Party for now. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Annabelle Timsit of Quartz, again live from London, here on Delaware.